Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I have worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly, or to not put our hearts into an activity, means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most. Where heart and mind work together, we are happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present, and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different side of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and its stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best, and be well. Ron. Episode 1, Think with the Heart. Neil, a 14-year-old boy, was brought to my office for an evaluation at the request of his school. He had gotten into an argument just outside the school building. As his rage increased, he threw down a nearby bicycle. The bicycle bounced into an elderly man, knocking him down. The man was okay, but the school wanted to make sure that it would be safe to allow Neil to return. I didn't know him, and I didn't know his parents. When I heard this story, I wondered how they got to see me instead of a psychiatrist. I had an hour built into my time, so instead of saying that, I thought I would do my best to see where I could help. I spoke with him alone, and I spoke with his parents alone, and I spoke with everyone together, and I learned that he had frequent flares of his temper. I thought that if I could figure out the reason for these temper outbursts, I would be able to direct him the right way. It seemed, based on my experience, that he likely fit into one of three patterns. There are some teenagers who have disordered thinking, who for whatever reason can't tolerate normal situations and they trigger them. There's another group of teenagers that I see, particularly boys, who have a chip on their shoulder, who walk around being angry. These students get triggered when something bothers them. A third group of students are those who developed a pattern of exploding when things don't go their way. I thought Neil fit in the last of these groups. He seemed like a nice kid, his thinking didn't seem disordered, he wasn't angry, and he was remorseful over what happened. When I had the family and him all together, I spoke to them and said, "You seem like a nice guy, but you blow up when things don't go your way. Now, it's your life, and you can live it however you want. But let me tell you this, that if you continue to do this, if you continue to explode when you get upset, things won't work out well for you. Your life will be around the problems that you cause. If you think about it, you're not happy you're here now, and neither are your folks, and neither are your teachers. In addition, as you get bigger and stronger, I'm afraid the consequences of your actions will be more severe, because you will cause more in the way of problems. Now, if you don't want that to be the course of your life, if you want to enjoy your life, you're going to have to learn how to not let things bother you, how to look past them and control your temper. I'd like to send you to someone who practices cognitive behavioral therapy. Therapists with cognitive behavioral therapy teach how to substitute new patterns of behaviors for old ones. So instead of having temper tantrums, you can learn to do something at that time that will diffuse your emotions. Now, it's going to take you about 2 to 3 weeks before you can get to see someone who practices cognitive behavioral therapy. In that time, I'd rather that you do something instead of just waste it. So what I would like you to do is practice not getting your way. And here I spoke to them and to his parents. And I said, what I would like your parents to do is every once in a while tell you that you can't have something that you want. Now, these needn't be big things. In fact, it's probably better if they're little small things. So if, for example, you're at the dinner table and you ask for a roll, they might say no. At these times, I want you to remain completely unflustered. So unflustered that it would seem like you didn't even ask the question. I'd like it to not disturb you in the slightest. And then I said to his parents, you have to be thoughtful about these episodes. You can't, for example, in the middle of an argument say, oh, this is where you have to listen to us. No, you need to think about what you're going to do beforehand. And then I asked them to come back in 2 weeks so I could find out how things went. They all agreed. When they came back 2 weeks later, as they were getting settled into the chair, his mother was the first to speak. She said, we didn't do it. I was just about to ask why, because I had made this up and I was curious about how it worked out, when she said, we didn't have to. The second we left here, he was a different kid. He was this sweet, nice guy that we'd always known, but hadn't been around for a very long time. I'd written a note at the last visit saying that he could return to school, and the father told me that he heard the same from school. His teachers said that he was helpful and that he was working hard. They also noted that he seemed to get along well with his friends. After hearing this, we chatted for a while, and then I congratulated him. I told him to keep up the good work, and then I told him that I wanted to make sure this wasn't a single one-time event, that I would like to see him back again in a month. They came back a month later, and sure enough, they told me he was the same great kid. He was pleasant and delightful to be with. I again congratulated him, and then I spoke with him alone. I said, listen, you have done more in this short period of time than most adults do in their entire lives. Now I'd like to give you the advanced course, the thoughts that most adults don't even know exist. If in the course of your life, when you normally would have gotten frustrated and upset, if instead you can not let what happened bother you, if you can see past the people's shortcomings that would have irritated you and become friends with them, allow them to have the space to have their shortcomings, but see beyond that. And if you can let certain situations not irritate you, you will have a rich and wonderful life and you'll be helpful to others. That's all I said. Now, I tell this story because embedded in it are multiple aspects of heart-based thinking. I cared. The heart cares. When I heard this story, I thought I'd like to help this boy. A second part of heart-based thinking is that I was able to sort through my thoughts on what I thought might be going on and then get a sense of what indeed was going on. We're able to get a sense of someone else through the heart, not just an intellectual understanding, but we can experience how they're feeling. We know this when our friends are sad, when they're happy, we can feel their sadness and their happiness. We also would respond out of this if we saw a young child who was riding his bicycle fall and cry. If we saw that that child was okay, but was just upset, we would feel it. We'd feel that we wanted to go over and help, and we probably would. A third aspect of heart-based thinking is that it wants to heal and it also wants to support with love. We use this regularly and in many different ways. Suppose we're planning a family vacation. We want everyone who's going to go on that vacation to have a great time. Now, to plan a good vacation, we think about the amount of money we want to spend, how far we want to travel, and then we have images of certain vacations that are possible. We then take these images and overlay them on the images of the people involved. If we see that they will shine in the space of the vacation that we imagine, then we know that we'll have a vacation that will work. So in the situation with this boy, I pictured the cause of his upset, that he just developed a pattern of screaming and flipping out when things didn't go his way. And then I tried various possible ways of imagining his acting that way and finding a way out. That's how I came up with my plan. Another aspect of heart-based thinking is that it is objective. It is as absolutely objective as scientific rigor. I had to find a solution for this boy that would work in his setting and in his situation. Now, we normally don't think of the heart as being objective. We think of it as being filled with emotion, with sentimentality, with bias. But that's an absolute and full misunderstanding of what we're speaking about here. The heart thinks with clarity and precision. In addition, the results of heart-based thinking are measurable. His parents recognize the change, his teachers recognize the change, and I'm sure that if I asked him, he would have recognized the change. One other aspect of heart-based thinking that's key here is understanding how my few words could make such a difference in this boy's life. This is because the heart not only can sense another, but it can break down barriers of age and race and sex and everything else and speak as one human being to another. I spoke to him out of simple psychological realities. He could hear what I said, take a look at his life, and see if what I said was true. Was he doomed to having difficulties if he continued in the way he was going? He could then also see the other possibility that I mentioned, the idea of not letting such times upset him, and he could see that indeed would lead to the results that I described. He was able to then absorb this, use this, and chart his life based on that. Sometimes in life, we do have people who make a giant difference in the way we act and see the world. Sometimes life's events do that, and these range from falling in love with someone to having a serious illness or an accident. These various circumstances could cause us to change how we see the world and how we act. Sometimes the onus is on us. Sometimes we see what we need to do and we make the change. My mother loved me, but she was a very difficult and very complex person. Her biggest challenge, I only realized much later in life, was that she saw the world through her eyes and nothing but her eyes. If anybody pushed her and tried to make her see things differently, if anybody tried to make her see life from their perspective, she would shut down and ultimately turn that person into an enemy. I faced this many times in my childhood, and here I'd like to give a few examples of situations in my adult life. I was once talking to her over the phone, and I told her that I had sprained my ankle while running. Now, my mother was totally unathletic. I never even saw her take a long walk. Yet, as soon as she heard that I hurt my ankle while running, she became an authority on running. Running is bad for you. You shouldn't be running. My friend showed me an article where someone had a heart attack while they were running, and people have serious injuries because of running, and she went on and on, telling me how terrible running was. She couldn't possibly imagine that I liked running and that it wasn't fun to start every conversation with her telling me how I shouldn't do something that I like doing. In addition, she couldn't take into her world that I was a physician and I actually had a great interest in sports medicine and knew about running. Nope, she couldn't do that. She could only see from her perspective. She became a widow once she retired, and when she came to visit us or we went to visit her, I'd reserve some private time with my mom, and I'd do this usually by taking her out to dinner. When we went out to dinner, we'd look at the menus, order what we wanted to order, and then when the food came, another of my pet peeves rose to the fore. She'd practically jump across the table and certainly with her eyes look at my food and say, "That looks so good. Could I have some?" I'd say, Mom, we just spent all this time thinking about what we wanted, and we ordered our food. Let's just enjoy what we have, and then certainly you can have some. I only want a taste. What would be such a big deal about just having a taste? If I continued, she would get angry, and the conversation would end. When I was in my 40s, I was a pediatrician and had two wonderful daughters. One day it occurred to me that parenting is difficult and that my mother did her best. She really wasn't outwardly a very good parent, but she loved me, and that's all I needed. I felt solid and secure because I knew she loved me despite things that she had done. I decided that I wanted to say thank you to her. I wanted to say thank you for making all the efforts and putting her heart and soul into parenting, because that's obviously what she did. I tried telling her that, and she mumbled something about, it's how you act that counts, it's not what you say. I realized at that moment that getting her a present to say thank you wouldn't make the difference either. When I thought about my mom, and I thought I wanted her to feel good about what she had done as a parent, I realized there was only one way. I had to stop arguing with her, and stop arguing about everything. That's the path I decided to take. I got pretty good at it, and here I'd like to give two examples. When she was older, she lived in a nursing home near my office. On days when I was in the office, I would have lunch with her. I brought my lunch, and then very quickly I realized she'd want what I brought. So I made my lunch with her in mind, thinking of food she liked, I spiced in the way that she liked, and I made sure that it was chewable and not too hard to swallow. I then realized something I hadn't expected, that she couldn't tolerate the nursing home lunch going to waste. So not only did I give her my lunch, I had to eat the nursing home lunch. And trust me, this nursing home was not a culinary wonderland. But I could do it. I had decided that I would do this, and I could do it without a problem. She had a roommate in her very small room who faded in and out of consciousness. I don't know that I ever saw her sit up, and I hardly ever heard her voice. My mother showed me one day a call button that she had when she needed the nurse. This was a little plastic cylindrical tube with a little red button on the top of it. And she said to me with a little glint in her eye, she said, you know, I'm supposed to use this to call the nurse. But I realize they come so much more quickly. If I yell for them because of the work I'd done, I could just chuckle and laugh and say, only you, Mom, only you would think of that. I occasionally came in a little bit early to talk to the nurses and the staff, just to make sure that they were able to manage with my mother, and they told me that they really enjoyed her. She had spunk, she had character. Yeah, she had her quirks, but that wasn't a problem for them. They really liked her. In addition, they told me that whenever they reminded her that I was coming that day for lunch, her entire demeanor changed. She perked up. Even when she was starting to lose her grip, she got more focused and was a different person. She just was so happy at the thought of my being there. We had a little routine on my leaving. She'd be sitting in a wheelchair, and I would lean over and hug her. Just before our hugs, we each took our glasses off, so that when our faces pressed together, there was only flesh against flesh. During that moment, I felt a beam of light passing between us. It was all the love that a mother had for her son. It was really remarkable. I was with her as she took her last breaths. I sat by her side, singing softly and humming, and I was so glad for all the work that I had done that allowed me to open to my mother's love. I tell this story because we all have the opportunity to change the way we manage certain relationships. I developed this podcast both to be interesting and inspirational and to tell a story about heart-based thinking, but also to help listeners who are interested to change their lives. I propose a challenge that consists of three parts. The first part is to look at the relationships in your life and the situations in your life and see where there are bumps and roadblocks. Look for the situations that are difficult and frustrating. That's it. Just observe them. Look at all of your relationships, from home, to work, to family, to friends, to all the casual ones. See where there are difficulties. The second part is the motivational part. Imagine that all these difficulties had gone away. The neighbor who's annoying, the office person who talks too loud, or the car in the parking lot that cuts you off. Imagine that none of those happen anymore. See how much more relaxed you'd be. See how much more you'd enjoy life. See how much more you'd be able to be yourself. There wouldn't be things that stop you from enjoying your life. The third part of the exercise is to now look at those situations that you can't change, the situations and relationships that are the way they are, and then do what I asked this boy to do. See how you can look past them, develop friendships, develop relationships without letting what irked you stop you. Now, at this time and for this exercise, you can put in as much work as you'd like. It's really about living more happily, and there's nobody else who knows the work you're doing, and there's no such thing as failure. You'll be seeing all these people. If you work at enjoying them more, your life will go better. So in this time, you can work at this. Now, if you really don't put any effort into making change and simply do the picturing of the relationships that are difficult, picture them being resolved, and then picture which ones you can't change, but that you can change how you approach them. As you shine that light, as you think about these with your heart, over time, they will melt. Warmth and love simply melts away obstacles. It will happen. I plan on posting podcasts on the 1st and 15th of each month. That means if you're listening to this, give yourself 2 weeks before you listen to the next one and focus on this challenge. To help with these exercises, I've created several tools for listeners. In the show notes of this episode, I expand on this exercise. This gives you the opportunity to download it and read it. In addition, in the show notes, I include several quotations about the heart's role in human activity and the heart's role in thinking. I find these inspirational. I hope you like them. Now, at the podcast webpage at ronschneebaummd.com, that's SCHNEEBAUMMD.com, I also have a picture that I posted there with the words, "Think with the Heart." This picture comes in two sizes, one that can be used as wallpaper for your phone, and the other that can be used as a screensaver for your computer or tablet. I find that having a reminder of something I'm working on is of great help. In addition, at the webpage, please leave any comments, any questions, and any suggestions. I won't be able to answer each one of these directly, but know that the ones that I can't answer will be taken in and used as material for future podcasts. If you like this podcast, please share it. Share it with friends. Share it with colleagues. Share it with anyone who you think might find it interesting. In addition, go to the homepage where you listen to podcasts, subscribe to it, rate it, and review it. That's how podcasts get known. I've enjoyed my chat with you. I look forward to our next time together. Until then, my very best and be well, Ron.